So, Tony, well, first, let me introduce my man here, Tony Francisco. He is co-host of MSP Dispatch, also on this network. You guys need to check it out. Wonderful, very special guest today. And welcome everyone out there in computer land. That's what they're calling it nowadays, by the way. Computer land. Welcome to 38 at 38. My name is Aaron Bolton. I'm by the age of 38 years, I've had 38 jobs. And in this podcast series, I go through each one of those jobs because each one of those jobs have, it's like ridiculousness follows me. Or maybe I just go searching for it, but every one of those jobs have some kind of ridiculous, crazy story to it. And each episode, my guest comes on and shares with me their worst job story, because everyone has a worst job story. And Tony, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, please? Tony Francisco, ladies and gentlemen.
Aaron, always great hanging out with you, talking to you. We haven't seen each other for a very long time. We have to, you know, see each other in an event.
Absolutely. I miss you.
Have some shots of tequila, create some history and some memories that we'll never remember until someone surfaces said picture. But yeah, I guess I'm probably most known for, other than the tequila shots and wearing tank tops to my board meeting. Actual story, yep. By the way. I invented multi-tenant hosted exchange back in 2003. So, you know, I made my mark in the industry and in the MSP world, the managed service provider world, in the technology world. I'm pretty well known, but I've made my mark, and that wasn't like, hey, this is, you know, that defines who I am. It just happened to have been a very nice event in my life that made me a credible source as I moved into, you know, further into these trade shows, into these meetings. But at the end of the day, watching technology evolve and meeting people like you in different larger organizations that, you know, have taken technology and moved it to another level, it's fascinating. It's everything's at light warp speed. I threw my grain of sand into the Grand Canyon. It doesn't really make an impact, but it's there. And so, yeah, that's who I am.
It does make an impact. What's the saying? One pebble can shift the river, something like that. If it's not a saying, it's a saying now, right?
One pebble now. Can shift the river. We are, you know, effectively in the tubes. We're in the tubes right now, flowing through the internet.
Exactly. You know, like I've always said, one pebble shifts a river. I've always said.
And Mark, this is on this particular day, on August 31st, 2022,
yeah, publicly, says, I will declare one pebble. Sorry for your luck, Mississippi. One pebble, you're done. Awesome. All right, so we come on, we talk about our worst jobs. You've had some, I haven't talked to you about your jobs. You said you've had some interesting jobs. I want to, and we can talk about other stories, but what would be your worst job or your worst job? It doesn't have to be total worst job over. It could be your worst job experience. What you got for me, Tony?
I've had so many amazing experiences at jobs, but you know, and I'm very open about this. I've been fired from so many jobs. Like, I've been fired, I think I calculated it, and I was wrong, by the way, when I've said this before. I've been fired from my last five jobs in a row. But it wasn't. I was fired from five of the last six jobs in a row. And
that's right.
All mixed in one.
Yeah, let's clarify this, guys.
Yeah, let me clarify how many times I've actually been fired. But, you know, I was asked to come back within 90 days because my boss, who fired me, ended up getting terminated. And then I was asked to come back to fill his or her position. Nice. And the reason for my termination was usually because, you know, I told them, with no uncertain terms, you have no idea what you're doing. And I don't know, am I allowed to swear on this?
Go for it. I didn't hear you swear. I heard like a donkey, or maybe somebody said platypus.
You know, I just said, you have no idea what you're doing. And apparently that, that doesn't go well when you tell your boss that. And And sure enough, you know, I was positioned to be the visual representation of, or a distract and evade technique, basically. Right. Let's fire this guy to show you how much progress I'm making over here, when in fact they weren't making any. I just happened to call it out. So,
Oh, yeah. And at that point, they can say, well, you know, and even if they do get called on being late or not making any progress, they can also say, yeah, well, I had to let go of Tony. And, you know, Tony was really dragging us down. And now what are they going to do? Go back and talk to you and someone who is an ex-employee? No. So yeah, that is a, wow, what a, you know, that's a, it's not a bad strategy. Let me go ahead and write
let me write that down. it goes back into that concept of, you know, somebody having a collection of knee-jerk responses, and they classify that as a strategy. That's not the case. And so what I do is, when I call that out in a business scenario, it's, you know, when you call somebody out and you have to do it in a very delicate way. Oh my gosh, you just reminded me of another way I got fired. let me go back for just a moment and act like I'm really, let me rewind entirely for everyone in the audience right now.
Okay.
You hear the term wise old man,
right?
This person wasn't always wise. This person has put their hand on the hot stove before. They've, you know, taken a bite of something that's way too hot. They've made friends with somebody that's wildly toxic too quick, and they committed too fast. These are people that have learned from their mistakes, and in a large,
no, mostly, are you saying yourself as being a wise old man?
I'm mostly on the old side, but not so much wise. However,
I want to say that because wise old, other people might be looking and saying, "Why? Okay, wise. All right, I get the wise, but old? That guy's not old.
No, I'm 50.
You are.
I'm old.
You are incredibly young looking for how.
I just told my best friend
on this phone call. I called my best friend before this. I was telling him about I'll be interviewing you, and I said, bro, this dude looks younger than both of us. Okay. And like, we're 38, 39 years old. This guy's like, and he's not, So
I go head to head in Brazilian Jiu Jitsu with these kids that are in their 20s, you know, almost every night, and it keeps me young, but secretly I'm stealing their soul. Exactly.
Every submission, every you submission. 6 months younger.
as I'm choking them out, I'm like, just take it.
Give me your life. So
I take another 6 months. I'm like, oh,
yeah, it tastes so good.
So going back to the point of, you know, the wise old man, they've made mistakes, and they can name that tune in one note. And the analogy I like to use is, right now, if I blindfold 100 people and I pull one little hair out of my head and I light it and I just, everyone knows the smell of burnt hair.
Yeah.
Because you've smelt it before, and it's usually with something bad. It's like, whoa, you know, you burn your hair at, you know, barbecue, anything. We all know the smell of burnt hair.
Never a good thing
when you smell burnt hair. Never associated with, oh, that's a pleasant smell. The nostalgia of burnt hair.
So it looks like someone just made a wish. Burnt hair. And
this goes back to our ancestry, and it's so hardwired in us. So we have developed this way of learning things along the way, and slowly but surely we can name that tune in one note, mm-hmm. and that's the wise old man. And so circling back to, you have to, you know, deliver something delicately as you're managing up as opposed to managing down. And when you tell your boss, hey, listen, you have no idea what you're doing. You're going to lead the ship into the rocks. Everyone knows it. And then fast forward, you're fired, which is very predictable, by the way.
Right.
Fast forward a little bit further, they're fired. Very predictable, by the way. And then you're asked to come back. The whole thing becomes so cyclical. You know, I think it was my fifth time getting asked to come back to be that boss. I was like, you know, I've been here too many times.
Right.
Fast forwarding to a job story where, am I allowed to say the company names? I don't even know if I'm allowed.
Go for it. Now, look, I will let you know, there are going to be tens of people watching this.
That was really funny. So the company was Schlumberger, and Schlumberger is
Schlumberger.
You go, here's the best part of it. I did the exact same thing that you did. And I'm like, Schlumberger. And then you go research it and you're like, how do I not know about this company?
Is it Swiss?
This, it's a French company.
French company. Okay.
And oil, which pretty much runs the world,
right?
At this point, 97% of the oil is discovered by Schlumberger.
What?
And Schlumberger tells the big companies where the oil is. So Schlumberger is literally at the key. Schlumberger is one of the biggest, most influential companies in the planet. On the planet, there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. They are so deeply connected into everything, and no one talks about them.
Oh, man. That's like a... No, let me tell you, that gives me vibes of 007, like Spectre. You know, like the big bad, you know, like, everything.
That was really funny.
It was German, French, but we're close.
So I got the job because I worked with the DOJ and I had this government background. And anyway, so I got the job and I'm the youngest kid in there. I'm their prodigy. But it's a sales role, but it's a completely different division of Schlumberger. It's a new, the GSM cards in cell phones, you know, like in your cell phone.
Yeah.
So there's seven of us in the world, and two of us in the United States, and we split the U.S. in half. And wow, this is nostalgic. So I'm brand new, and I'm making ridiculous money. Wow. There's two parts of this job. Now I'm like recalling all this. It's fascinating. When I say ridiculous money, ridiculous money, like.
How old were you?
28,
and you're making money that maybe like a guy.
A few months go by. I'm in the six figures. I was making ridiculous money, like absurd amount. I should not. Nobody of any age should be making that much money, right. And somebody in their 20s making that much of it is just completely unheard of. Right. So the story is that we're doing these forecasts, and I'm not good with financial forecasts. And so what I did is in this big talk about that weird Spectre James Bond scenario. It's this big room and it's a audience. You've seen those James Bonds where, like, you know, there's a big video and there's one guy, but there's all these seats with dark that no one can see, but there's people sitting, the audience that's criticizing this one person that they're all looking at.
Uh-huh.
It's that kind of room, 100% that room. And there are seven people at this little table and one person on the end. And the seven people are presenting their financial forecast. And this big screen, there's a couple of people on the screen from around the world, and you're showing your forecast. And they said, Tony, you can't have the same number for every month of the forecast for the next. That doesn't make any sense. And I said, well, yeah, you know, and you remember, brand new. I'm like 6 months in. And so he said, but it can't be, there's some kind of flexibility in the numbers based on their consumption. They're purchasing, these are cellular companies purchasing GSM cards.
Yeah, there should be fluctuation. There should 100%
every month based on consumption, okay? And a large portion, as in more than half of cellular sales, and I'm not joking about this, are at the end of the year, that Christmas time, that last quarter.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that the GSM cards are just unavailable because they're buying too much. So he said, you can't do that. You can't have it the same every single month. And I said, well, I did some calculations and it turns out that they lose between 14 and 16% of all of their sales opportunities every year in the last, well, I'm sorry, nine on the worst goes 1 year, 9 to 16% of their sales opportunities because we just can't produce enough of those SIM cards.
Right.
So I said, hey, the value of money is, you know, between 3 and 6%. So why don't you just pay it all for me up front? I dog ear it for you. You've already paid for it, which means we can't short you that. You get it before everyone else,
right?
Which you have a net gain, even though you gave us all the money up front. So I just divided it up and I said, we divide it up over the year. And
sounds like a value strategy.
It's a huge deal, but megabucks. Yeah, I mean, they're paying literally for the year.
Right.
And he goes, this is the president of my division, says, yeah, good luck getting them to pay all of that up front. And I said, well, it just makes sense. And he goes, I'll give you $100 if you can make that happen. So I literally, at that moment,
Tony said,
hold my folder, hold my beer. open up my folder and literally hold up the check and put it on the desk. He picks it up and he goes, looks like I owe you a drink. And I said in front of everyone without skipping a beat, as long as that drink's worth $100. 2 weeks later, I'm let go. 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later. So, that was point I'm trying to make is that you need to learn how to present.
Yeah.
What you're trying to present nicely. And because people have egos and all that stuff.
Here's what I know about you, okay? All right, we all have pride. We all have egos, right? We all have varying different situations pop up that can make our ego spike and everything. But from every interaction I've had with you, it's, look, what you see is what you get. You're a very confident person. And you have, tell me if I'm wrong, an expectation and maybe even a hope that the person you're speaking with is going to be as open and as, you know, hey, it's okay. You know, like you're not, you might call them out, but at the same time, you're not downing them. You don't think less of them. You're not judging them. But that other person, like maybe they're not there in their journey. Maybe they're not there in their developmental journey. And that's so important to know that you have to keep that in mind that not everyone is going to be at that free flow. Cause same. I've been at companies before where management, everyone's like, you know, we got to shed our ego. We got to, you know, if open door policy and yep, let's roll all of our eyes, everyone, because yeah. I've been, looked down upon at certain companies because if I see a problem, I'm going to, hey, there's an issue here and I'll come with solutions. I'm not going to be like,
How dare you? Who do you think you are?
Well, Aaron, you don't know all the, and you are absolutely right. I'm not saying that everyone's wrong. I'm saying I see a problem. And if there's a reason for this problem, then okay, then just let me know. All right, no problem. All right, then just let me. But you told me if I had an issue, I can come to you. I thought always like this. And you're right. That's something I've had to learn too, which some, it, no matter what, it seems like there's always this political game that you have to play, you know, that things would just be so much easier. And you and I have close behavior styles, right? So we can say that things would be so much easier if people were just more open and just said what they, not realizing even sometimes, hey, there's a lot of people who just don't naturally feel that comfortable expressing themselves like that. There's a lot you got to learn that. No matter
if we're going to really like start to unwrap this, I would challenge that the distinctive difference between the you and I and most others is that you have a comedy background. You've been on stage. You understand how to be laughed at and laugh at yourself. Mm-hmm. And I cannot describe how important that is. And right now, everybody is thinking, you know, Tony, I've created, you know, 3 multi-million dollar companies, you know, I've run these companies, but then I talk about how I've been fired multiple times. I talk about Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I do that all the time because guess what? In the nicest possible way, I have to laugh at the fact, and it's not a negotiable fact. It's not something I can rationalize. I am literally trading bodily fluids with 50 to 60 other dudes a night. Now, mm-hmm. granted, a lot of girls as well, but it doesn't matter. I am literally getting, I know every single guy who's circumcised and who's not. I mean, you are
lucky.
You are
lucky.
Yes. Meow. So, you know, you have to laugh at that because it's just there. Now, that being said, you can laugh all you want with me. You want to fight me? I'm okay with that. Let's do that. You know, right. And well, hold on. Well, say that. Where's your man card? Where's your man card now? You're so tough. You know, some people truly, their relevance is supported or justified by their ability to tear others down. Mm. People like you and I build others up.
That's a quote.
Help and help others, you know, by promoting who they are and helping them in any way that we can. Some people just don't comprehend the concept of being, you know, self-deprecating publicly because they don't understand that, hey, maybe they are piece of crap in person to some people, in some people's perspectives. Maybe they aren't as helpful as they could be to other people. But guess what? every single person listening to this right now, you, me, everyone should always feel that. Well, I'm never good enough. I could always help people more. And
yeah,
that's why you and I are a little bit different, because you know what? We laugh at each other. You have been on stage, laughed at and have and not laughed at, feeling completely lacking.
Alone. Yeah.
And that, I don't care how strong you are. I just don't. There's no way you're going to convince me that you are able to shed that off. If you can, you're just not human. You're not my people.
Right.
You know, you're not my tribe. And when I'm doing jiu-jitsu and I have a girl that's 110 pounds choking me out because she's a little spider monkey or a squid that I can't do anything, I have to laugh at that.
Yeah.
Laugh at myself. But at the end, I'm going to go, that was amazing. And tell her that was incredible. Or some little dude that you would never expect in a fight. I would never fight that. Don't even make eye contact with that guy. That guy's a monster. But he doesn't have to be that way. He's actually just training. So we're all complimenting each other. But then you got the tough guy, and the moment, you know, some old dude chokes him out, not joking, happens all the time, gets mad, stomps off, goes in the locker room, and then leaves.
Yeah.
Because his ego can't process it.
Right.
And that's why I like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because it really exposes your mortality. There's no room for ego. And now granted, as you get up and be higher belts, there's no ego. It's all ego. It's 100% ego. But you learn to contain it better.
Yeah. But that's the point. That's the point of humility and your pride and keeping your ego in check. That's the whole thing. And you were saying it, that no matter what, no one just done. You know, I use that as an anchor. Whenever like something's on my shoulder, like something bothered me, I my anchor is next. I got I'm doing that not because I don't feel it. I'm doing that because I feel it and I want to get rid of it. So I need to flick it off and I need to process it. So it's not like, oh, I don't feel it. No, I feel it. I don't want to, but I got to process it. I've said this saying for a while, and I know it's not mine. Maybe I remixed it a little bit, but if you're not laughing at yourself, then somebody else is. And don't take yourself, if you take yourself too seriously, then nobody else will, right? So you got to humble yourself. Dude, what I like about, well, first of all, I've been at that point where I was like 24, 23 years old. And I was selling advertising. Actually, I can talk about this job because it was on a previous episode when I was selling Yellow Page ads. And ridiculous. Yeah, I was like the last generation at the tail end of people who could sell Yellow Page ads. And I was 23 and I was making dumb money. I'm talking about the guy sitting next to me was like a father with two teenage kids, and his wife was a stay at home mom, and he was providing for like the, and I was outselling him, and I'm like,
I love that,
you know, and I'm not saying to brag. I'm saying that this is in my mind, 23 years old, making this money. This is ridiculous. Right. And, dude, I got humbled a lot there, and I ended up leaving because it was such a stressful environment that my 23-year-old self, about to get married, I couldn't handle that. I was burnt out. I wasn't feeling any joy. Like I wasn't. I found out I love to teach. As a matter of fact, I left that job and I talked about it because I thought I wanted to be a school teacher. nope. But
this is what I in the very beginning in the green room, we're talking about the bad jobs. I'm like, I haven't had a lot of bad jobs. I've had a lot of bad managers and bad experiences, but the experiences have also been amazing. And that experience you just mentioned made you realize you need a work-life balance, made you realize that, hey, making money isn't everything and it can actually be overpowered by X. And it's up to you to define the X, of course.
That value. Absolutely. But so I was saying, when you said that you got fired from that job, like the pit in my stomach, I was like, ugh. Because I know that feeling of like you're doing well, you got some comfort, you got some you're solid, and then now the carpet's yanked out from under you. You're 28 years old, so really in the grand scheme of things, like when you're 28, you're like, I've got some life experience, and then you get a little older. Like I'm 38 now, looking back at my 28 year old self, I'm like, man, you're an idiot. You don't know, and I'm sure when I'm 48, I'm gonna be looking back saying, you didn't know. you know? So, but really at 28, you really don't know like what to do. Maybe this is the first time this has happened to you, and you're, so I feel that gut wrenching experience. And the second part was, you know, to talk about, I always ask to talk about, well, what have you learned? Well, you perfectly wrapped that in there, you know, that you gotta learn the humility, but also you have to learn how to navigate those conversations when managing up, when talking up. Cause that's a, I love it. As long as I don't even see it, as long as that drink's $100, I don't see how that's, I think that's a great, dude, that's a,
I thought it was funny. I would be,
you know, oh. This is, I love this. I love this being on any podcast with you. But what I just know, I need you to write down whatever that idea was, because you're going to be coming back in a few months and telling that other story. I'll schedule you. Don't worry about it.
Deal.
Don't worry. All
right, talk about when I was fired from McDonald's.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Those are always great. Those are always.
No, I got fired. I've been fired for so many. They fired me. Fired from a government job because I didn't mesh with the team because I didn't like going to strip clubs. There's so many different. There's so many different things you just get fired for, and you're like, in retrospect, I'm okay with that. By the way, fired from McDonald's because I was eating the food that they throw away. Like if it's, I'm not joking. Like if it's past, I think it was like, if it's been there for more than 15 minutes, the burgers and the little warmers, they throw them away, but they have to count for what they throw away. And I said, well, I'm just gonna eat it. So I'm like eating. And they say, you know, you can't do that. If you do that again, you get written up. So I was like, you know, I'm a kid, you know, there's never enough food. And fast forward, they got written up, and then I got written up again. Then I got written up a third time. And they're like, we have to fire you. You got written up three times. It's company policy. And I'm like, because I'm eating food that you're going to throw away, that you're literally going to waste. Yeah. And I am a bottomless pit. I am like a teenager. Anyway. So.
Can you imagine the manager was like sitting with his assistant manager, like, I don't know, Tony. I keep telling Tony to stop. I don't want to fire you. What do you do? Like they had whole meetings just about you and you eating.
It was. Oh, gosh. And I look back on that in retrospect and I don't blame them. Because of, you know, corporate policies and auditable records. But I also have two sons that I have to eat like I'm in prison. Like I'm like looking around.
Yeah.
Like, because if I look away, I'm like, where's my food? You know? So
thanks, Dad.
Exactly. It's like locusts just fly by. Right. Anyway. So but we could also solve a major human hunger issue
if we
just figure out how to feed the anyway.
Okay, so you have chosen a quote. I sent you some quotes. You chose a quote.
Yes.
And this quote represents one of my 38 jobs. So go ahead and lay me on. Which quote would you like to go with?
So the ones I wrote down.
Just pick one. Just pick one of those quotes.
Yeah. If I had a shotgun, I would blown his head off because that's something that instantly everyone goes, oh, yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. Well, I love this story. Oh, I love this story. I love it, love it, love it. All right. So yeah, the quote was, if I had my shotgun, I'd blow his head off. And that was directed at me. Like that I was a person who.
Well, that's not where I thought it was going.
No.
That's not the inverted way of.
You thought I'd be like, like me saying, I'm going to shoot that.
Frustrated customer. Oh, yeah.
Frustrated someone else who told all of Tampa Bay that they were going to shoot, blow my head off. So I'll tell you about this. And we kind of alluded to this or talked a second about it a little bit. So I used to do stand-up comedy, right? I used to do stand-up comedy. And I don't put that as one of the jobs of the 38, but I used to do stand-up comedy when I was about a year, maybe less than a year out of high school. And I did it for about 7 years. And so I was young. I went out to the improv here, the Tampa Bay Improv. And I was like, yeah, let me just go out and do the stand-up. And I did the stand. I did my first bit. And it was just stories that I would often tell. You know, I had 4 minutes. I crushed it. I mean, I got applause. I was like, oh, this is cool. First time. Great. I made fun of my mom. My mom was in the audience. It was great. And then afterwards, I remember stepping down and I didn't know what to do. I was like, yeah, this is fun. And some people are, you know, some of the comics or a couple of them were like, hey, good job. And then some of the more seasoned comics, I went to the bathroom. They were like, there's like a high top table down by next to the hallway by the bathroom. And I was like, hey guys. And they're like, yeah, and they were like, you did a great job. I was like, thank you. And they said, yeah, it was even funnier when I saw that bit on Comedy Central last night. And I was walking down the hallway and I stopped and I backed up and I was like, I don't care who you are. You know, I was like, excuse me? It's like, I saw that on, I was like, no, you did. I said, dude, that is a story. I didn't even have cable. I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about, man. I said, those are my stories. I said, did you hear? That's my mom. Like these are, okay. So since I called that person out, that person went and complained to the manager of the improv, David Minky. And David Minky liked that I called this guy off. I was brand new and I just called one of the comedians out. So he was like, and I went over my time. So I wasn't eligible to go like to get like this extra feature spot or something like that, like this extra spot during the weekend. But David Minky said, dude, I like you. You're funny. I want you to come back. And then at that point, I just every week I was at the improv. I was like, oh, I mean, it's like the luckiest way to jump into stand up, right? I mean, I was just, oh, it was there. So kept working on my bits. David Minky gives me a phone call one day. I'm at home and he says, hey, man. I'm sorry. I actually called him up because I told him I was looking to, I wanted to be an intern. Mind you, I'm 19 years old. I wanted to get on radio, get my name out there on radio. Ladies and gentlemen, all these kids watching, that was before the YouTubes. So, you know, you had to get your name out there. So I wanted to be the intern on this morning show. You might be familiar with it, Tony, the MJ Morning Show on 93.3, yes. Right?
Yep.
So
yep.
I got in touch with them. I said, hey, I want to be an intern. I do this. I threw in there, I do stand-up comedy because I, you know, need some kind of something for them to look at me. And they said, yeah, no problem. Come by, you know, like 5:30 in the morning to the studio. The night before, I'm talking to David Minky. I'm telling him that, you know, and he says, dude, he said, why MJ Morning Show? Why 93.3? And I said, I don't know. He's like, dude, that guy sucks. Like, he's like, I do not like him. And he's telling me these stories. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. He's like, hold on. How about if I've got this friend, Chris Fisher from 97X. He's a buddy of mine. Let me call him. Called me up and said, hey, or called me back and said, hey, I just talked to him. He said, definitely come on by. I said, yeah, but I already had this set up with this MJ Morning Show. I'm not going to just diss him out the next morning. He goes, okay, well, if you get on if you end up, you're not liking it, then they said they'll love to have you. I said, oh, perfect. You know, 97X, Chris Fisher, Fisher and Napoleon. And I said, all right, perfect. And he said, as a matter of fact, if you get on the mic and you really want to, you know, you can just give it to, go off on MJ, the host, and, you know, and you'll be fine. Internship. Said, okay, perfect. Not a problem. So I get there 5:30 in the morning. Man, everyone's kind of, no welcoming. It's like, yeah, you sit here. It was very, the culture was not good. And I realized, you know, if you have a culture like that, it all starts from the top, right? So before MJ walks in, he's put like the producer going to put, hey, no, MJ wants a clear path to here. He doesn't, you know, he came in and went right on in and didn't say hi to anyone. And hey, started doing his little opening thing with the morning. And I was there for like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, just sitting there waiting. And then they finally said, hey, when we come back from the break, we're going to put you on the mic. And, MJ will talk to you. I said, okay, cool. I'm being just nice. And this is fun. You know, I'm excited. You know, this is, I'm seeing how a whole radio station in the morning works and everything. And, finally, they called me up. They're like, all right, well, we got some guy here. This is what he said. We got some guy here from who says he does some stand-up. He wants to be an intern. And I'm thinking maybe this is his shtick. I don't know. Whatever. You know, of him being like this. Get on up here. So I get up, and I'm like, I'm looking at the monitor at you right now. But that's basically about how far away I was from MJ, just across this table, maybe 3 feet away from him. And I sidle up. He's like, man, if you guys could see this guy. And then he starts clowning me. He's like, look at this. I mean, I had like curly hair, like kind of longer curly hair. It's like, look at this guy. He's like, what? And he actually, I remember going back. He's like, what are you? Like what nationality are you? Which, like, try to ask me that today. You know, try to ask me that today. And he goes, what nationality are you? I was like, oh, I'm Cuban. He goes, you guys need to see this. He's a Cuban guy. He got this kid here. He's got curly hair. He looks like the Cuban Carrot Top. That's what we're going to call you, Cuban Carrot Top.
You're just like, making me, you're giving me anxiety.
I'm just trying to be. And he goes, all right. So what, you do improv? You want to be, okay, so you think you're good enough here? And he's just dogging me. And I'm like, why would I possibly want to work? But looking back now, that's what he's doing. He's trying to whittle out anyone who's going to talk back, and he doesn't want them. He wants a stooge that he can just crap on, you know, so he says,
that
so
goes look, full circle back to the beginning of the conversation where some people justify their relevance and their worth or value by cutting on other people, ripping
absolutely
on them. And it's not in your nature or my nature to do that. And those other people are not my tribe. Anyway, sorry.
Right. No, absolutely.
As soon as you start saying that's all that's resonating through me right now,
it's the same thing. The reason in school, bullies bully other, hurt people, right? So bullies bully other people to make themselves feel better. Right. They push people down to feel like they're pushing themselves up, but they're not pushing themselves up at all, you know? So anyways, he goes, go ahead and say, do your jokes. Just tell if you're Mr. Funny Man, which is like, oh, tell if you do comedy, tell me your joke. All right.
That is literally the worst thing.
Somebody asked me that last night in class. Somebody told somebody in one of my training classes that I did stand up, and somebody in class last night said, tell us a joke. And then another guy was like, what? You can't ask that. Don't you? And went off on the other guy for asking me. I was like, good job. So now let's get back to conflict resolution. So he said, tell us a joke. And I was like, at this point, I was like, done. One of the producers went right in my face right before I said anything. He goes, you better not curse. It's like, which I didn't curse anyways, like in my stand. I was like, at this point, I had enough. And I said, all right. I said, hey, everyone, how y'all doing? Thank you so very much for having me out here. Listen, I greatly appreciate it. I want to thank Fester and Froggy and I forget the producer's name, but I was thinking of them. And I was like, man, you guys have been very welcome and I appreciate it. But MJ, what the hell is your problem? This is on his show. Arbitron rated number one show, the number one show listened to in Central Florida, like not even number one morning show, number one radio show. Right. And I go, what? And this is right in the middle of morning drive time, the highest rate. And I go, what's your problem? I go, man, you come in here.
You guys don't, everyone listening to this doesn't understand. This is literal poetry that you're listening to right now. This is what is it? Karmatic poetry.
Yeah. Like, you're familiar with MJ Kelly, right? Or Todd Schnitt. Right. You're familiar with, you've heard him. You've been in Tampa for a while. Now he's back on. So he was a big thing back then. And so I said, I said, you know, what's your problem? I go, you know what? I came in here. I said, and he went from like this to like, and I said, you know what? And I said, you wish you guys could have me. No way. You know what? I'm running over to 97X and taking an internship with Fisher and Napoleon. However, I said Fisher and Neptune. Got the name wrong. I never listened to that radio station ever. Never even turned it on. Not even that show. Just never listened to a radio station. So I called him out. I said, MJ, you suck. And I took my headphones off and I tossed him at him. And he's like an orangutan. He's slapping all, like he could not hit the cancel feed button quick enough.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no delay. So it all went out and I said, out. And I walked out. I just walked out. The producer comes out. Aaron. I said, yeah, he's laughing. The producer laughed. He goes, that was hilarious. Now, MJ was not laughing. Very, very mad, which kind of tells you your producer is laughing at this whole situation, not even offended for you, not even offended. Well, no surprise there, right?
People of that ilk are extraordinarily brittle, and everybody has their own kink. For lack of a better term. And my 100% kink is to publicly dismantle said people. And you do that with such fluidity and such ease as you gain experience in life. And as a kid, you're always seeking justice.
Right.
You don't get to execute that until later in life, until you can do it. Similar to the last scene of the first Matrix movie when he's just kind of doing it completely frictionless with no effort at all. As you get older, you can publicly dismantle somebody and be so effective in what you say with such a small amount of effort.
Right.
And that particular effort that you did was, you know, frankly, calling out what a lot of people already knew. And that was validated by the producer.
MJ, you suck. I walk out. I get in my car. I get in my car and I'm like, okay. And to date it, I get in my car and I go to look at my passenger seat and I pick up my printed MapQuest directions on how to get to Cox radio station. So, and I turn on 93.3 FLZ, the morning show.
Oh, that's fun.
And
that's
I good. Turn it on and I hear, MJ going off. He's like, who let that guy? Did anyone scream that guy? And he is going off. And he said, I swear if I had my shotgun, I would have blown that kid's head right off. This is a grown man. I'm 19 years old. I didn't threaten him. I didn't say anything like I was going to hurt him. No violence. I said he got on. Now, mind you, I went to his house and peed on his carpet. But not literally, I went in his world he did say I could come in and he was being a horrible host. So, and when he said that, man, chills. My life never been threatened. Not only that, I'm listening to this and this is the number one radio station and he's calling my name. And now it's called doxing, right? So he's putting my name out there. He's telling people, cause I did have a job. He's telling people where I worked. The location of where I worked and everything, which
gives you a level of anxiety. You almost become neurotic.
Never felt this stress that, I often say that when a younger person is going through stress, chances are that is the most stress they've ever been through because the experience that they don't have many. This was a level of stress that for 3 weeks, it kept going on his radio station. He was berating me. He was telling people to come to my job, which I don't want to talk about what job it is. That job is for another, but telling people, and people were coming to my job, screaming at me, yelling at me. Oh, it was, man, it was rough. So anyways, I drive to Cox radio station, 97X. They let me in and they're like, dude, they said, first of all, guy's name, this is Napoleon, not Neptune. I was like, my bad, my bad. And he said, but that was hilarious. Puts me on the mic, treats me super kind, super nice. That's when I first started listening to alternative rock. I never really listened to alternative rock beforehand, but I was like, oh, this is good music. I like this. Right. So I'm there. This internship did not last long. It was fun. I got to be on the mic. I got to be on the radio. I got to do a couple bits where I went out and to a place that does septic tanks and everything. Just dumb little yuck, radio bits. It was fun. And then I came in one day and one morning and everyone was kind of quiet. I'm like, they're like, yeah, we don't know how much longer we can keep you here and we're fighting to keep you here. I'm like, well, what's going on? Well, MJ's yelling and complaining that, hey, if we're going to have radio warfare, you need to let me know because it's on. We're going to have some radio warfare. I was like, oh, and he's like, don't worry. We're battling for you. Okay. Goes through. There's a break in the, station break. Chris Fisher walks out. He comes back in. He's like, look, Aaron, I just went ahead and had a conversation. I think we're okay. But, you got to keep it low, man. You got to maybe apologize to MJ and stuff. I was like, oh, my goodness, it's like that. He's like, yeah, but, we'll find out. Keeps going. Another station break. Chris gets called out. He comes back. He goes out, comes back. He goes, Aaron, listen, look, we're going to have to let you go from this internship. I was like, why? Why? Well, the president of the radio station, his parents live across, or no, he lives across the street from MJ's parents, and he checks in on MJ's parents, like they're really close together. And yeah, this is coming from the president of this radio station. We got to let you go. Dude, I felt so dejected. I felt like what did, now, mind you, looking back now, the lessons I learned were great, right? That like, okay, you stand up for yourself. Don't let people talk crap. Don't talk crap about you. But also if you're going to say something, be more tactful about it, so I've learned these things, but that time was the most stressful. I mean, it was a while. I've had more stressful times since then, trust, but it was a while until I got that point where think about my job, I couldn't just not go. It was my job. But the company couldn't tell the customers, hey, don't come in if you're going to say something to Aaron, you know? So, and it would be random. They'd come in and just say, oh yeah, hey, where's Aaron? Oh, is that Aaron? Hey, Aaron, you suck. You suck. I'm like, oh, this is horrible. Yeah. So, so another one of my wonderful experiences there, that's a kind of combined of that internship and my stand-up days. But, yeah, at least, it did me well in like the, you know, for like the stand-up, you know, during that time, nobody ever, as a matter of fact, that same night afterwards, after that whole thing, I was doing a set at the Improv and they had David Meinke, the manager, met me. He goes, Aaron, I heard it. It was hilarious. Congratulations. That was courageous. We've got security here because the two sidekicks, Fester and Froggy, they had shown up or MJ's morning show. They had shown up to the Improv to heckle me, specifically to heckle me. He's like, I got security. I walked up to him with security and said, look, love you guys. You open your mouth, I'm kicking you out. Don't even mess with my guy.
Good.
I felt so good. I was like, wow, protection. Yeah, that made me feel really good. But it took a while for me to get over, you know, being, you know, publicly shamed. And you know what? About 8 years later, I was back. I was living in Lakeland, but I was driving through Tampa and it was on the weekend. They were doing some kind of MJ Morning Show was out like at some kind of event, you know, doing something to promoting something. And I drove by and MJ walked to his car and I followed him out to his car. I was like, hey, MJ, I don't know if you remember me. And I reminded him. He goes, yeah, man, I remember you. I go, listen, I just want to apologize. I just want to apologize to you because that caused you unneeded stress and you weren't looking to have that type of stress. Man, I was like 25. Yeah, 26. I was like, you didn't need that type of stress. And I brought that stress on you. So I just need to apologize. And I saw there was like, you know, what do you say? What do you say? He was like, thank you. He goes, that means a lot. But then of course, when he's like, yeah, come on back. And he was like, hey guys, you remember this guy? Yeah. Yeah. I got him. Yeah. And then started, you know, the ego started and he's like, hey, he goes, hey, well, you know what they say? You mess with the bull. And I looked at him. I go, what? You never heard that saying? I go, I have no idea what you're talking about. You mess with the bull, you get the horns. I'm like, okay. You know, first time I heard that, I was like, cool. You get the horns. Were you the horns? Like, do you really think you affect my life that much? But that's okay. That's okay, buddy. I clapped it up for him. So yeah, that was
go back on the show and be like, hey, it's great to be back. Everyone, it's great to see you guys again. MJ, you're still a jerk.
Yeah, you still
hey, we'll end this exactly the way it was 10 years ago. You haven't changed. It's good to know that I've evolved. Best wishes, peace out. And
it's good to know that I've evolved. You suck.
Yeah. No, just that's an unfortunate, you know, it's an unfortunate event, but I actually did this it was like a pseudo TED talk. This is a long time ago. And there was like Ignite Tampa. And then we did a TEDx and stuff like that. And it was called the best mistake you've ever made. Mm-hmm. And
oh yes, yes, like, yes. I've seen this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I didn't know you saw it, but it talks about, you know, everybody wishes they could go back and undo something. And that's one of those things. Oh, I wish that didn't happen. But the reality is if you can go back in time right now and take back any of those jobs, those internships, the date that you didn't get, you know, the whatever it was, you know, that didn't have the team that you didn't make. If you went back in time right now and took that away, you would not be the person Absolutely. That you are right now. You are a sum of your total experiences. And those mistakes, whatever, were an amazing, amazing thing. And yep. they define who you are today. So it's really important that you look at the glasses half full scenario, but it's not a half full. It was just a drop. And yep. those drops add up over time and they define who you are as a human. And sometimes those horrible, horrible, horrible things that occur in the past really gave you a shell of armor that you need later in life because Absolutely. There was no harm, no foul back then. Back then, of course, the whole world's, you know, the sky is falling and everything's bad. But today, everything else is just, you know, water off.
You got to brush it off. You got to brush it off. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tony. Tony, this has been a fun, fun convo. This has been, it's never long enough. It's never, never long enough, but you've got more stories. I want to hear, definitely you need to come back as a guest. Would you come back as a guest?
I'll come back anytime. One of the story real quick. I was like, he's talking about like things you do. Like, I think you talked about internships, something you did over the summer or something. And I said, do I talk about like when I literally got paid to de-seed marijuana plants between third and sixth grade.
No, you you hold on to
that. Yeah, I know.
That is a good one. You hold on to that one.
But as a kid, that's why I don't smoke weed or anything. I just hate drugs because I was it was a job, and no one wants to go do their job after after their job. And so as a kid, I was scarred by because of that. But I'm like, yeah, it gives me a lot of good references.
We're gonna have some more combos on this, Tony. Thank you so much. Let's go ahead and wrap it up, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening all the way through. Hey, if you're listening. Do you have a bad job story? Do you want to be a guest on this podcast? All four of you listening? No. There's more. There's at least double.
Tens.
There's tens. Tens of tens. Reach out to me. Hit me up on LinkedIn. My info's been up on the screen. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Tell me what your story is, or tell me that you want to jump on as a guest, and we'll chat it up. All right. Outside of that, thank you so very much. I'll see y'all next time around. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Deuces. See ya.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
I kind of want all of this to be part of the podcast. And then like right when you get set up, we're like, all right, well, we're out of time.
Okay. Yes. Yes. I am so sorry.
No. I was making a joke. I'm not. I think this is all part of it, man. You know, I'm like,
the technical stuff was horrible on the way in. I mean, you should have seen.
What are you looking at? It looks good. You look good. I can hear you. I can see you.
Oh, hold on. So if I can turn this off. And then this on. No. You see that?
Yeah, the chroma key.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is. It's not playing with the chroma key. Okay, 2 seconds. This is all new to me, dude. I'm not a. Here we go. And then I move this. Oh, bye.
Patrick Swayze just dipped out.
That was, dude, you are good. How are you not on stage all the time?